Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome back to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Ben Pfeiffer, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host Max Carlin. Max, how's it going?
I'm doing all right, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing all right as well. And today we have our first full 2021 draft podcast. College basketball is officially underway, and we have lots to talk about regarding the 2021 draft. So without further ado, let's get into it.
The wait is finally over. Football's in full effect. With many teams strutting their stuff, you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, there have been 2 days of games, and we've got 20 things to talk about. This is great. This is wonderful. Although first, we're going to start with something that's not great and wonderful. Sharif Cooper, he is not eligible right now. We're recording this on Friday, November 27th. So Sharif is currently under investigation, not eligible, hasn't played in Auburn's first two games. Auburn is not good without him. I would imagine he's probably not going to be ruled eligible at any point. So the hope is kind of that he finds somewhere overseas that he can play. I was asking about it on Twitter. I can't remember, who it was, but someone who covers, the NBL was saying that they do still have, I think it's four of their next stars spots open. They don't start until January, so there's still time there, and they obviously just had success with RJ and LaMelo, and already have Justin Ian Jessup locked up, as well as Didi is back. So I would for sure like to see him go to the NBL. It's a spot where we've seen some young guards, despite their limitations, we shall say, in terms of necessarily contributing to winning on both ends, we've seen them enabled. So I'd like to see that. A lot of other international seasons, most other international seasons are underway already, and are not going to hand the keys over to a guy like that. Don't have the infrastructure in place to be taking an American high school star. So hopefully Sharif winds up in the NBL. That would be really cool. Otherwise, I don't know if we're going to see him. Getting eligibility seems like a bit of a long shot.
Yeah. If it hasn't happened at this point, again, feels like it's probably not going to happen anytime in the future, which is definitely unfortunate. Was definitely looking forward to watching Sharif. I know you were as well. But yeah, hopefully we can see him before, or if not, you know, we wait and he probably goes pro next year if he can't get eligibility. I mean, I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but.
Yeah, the thing that sucks for him is that this is not James Wiseman. Like, he can't just not play and then be a top three pick. That's not the perception of Sharif Cooper. Like, I think that he was expected to be a multi-year guy probably by a lot of mainstream sources. He is a guy who needs to play. I mean, I need to see him play, even as someone who likes him quite a bit. So he needs to play somewhere. I don't think that you can reasonably expect that he could not play and go on to be drafted this year. So Hopefully he winds up in the NBL. That's what I'd like to see.
So TBD on Cooper. We'll see.
Yeah, now on to a much more fun topic. Cade Cunningham played a basketball game, played a college basketball game. He was good. So the crazy thing in the Cade against what team was it?
Texas Arlington.
Against Texas Arlington was that he wasn't even that good. Particularly we didn't really see that much passing from him. We didn't see that much defense manipulation, and that's kind of what he's so good at, that with his size, he has incredible vision, that he is really adept using fakes and pacing and his eyes to create passes. And he didn't even really do that. And he was still pretty dominant against Texas Arlington in his debut. The scoring is really there. I think that was probably something that was talked up as a concern for him. And I'm not concerned about it at all. The jumper looks really good. He hit a pull up three. He hit a pull up mid ranger at least one. It looks really good. It looks compact. I think he's gonna get that off a lot and shoot well on them. But he looked again really, really amazing as a slasher. His pacing is so good, so deceptive. His handle at his size is really incredible. He had that one like semi transition behind the back that everyone saw that was pretty incredible. His balance, his strength, his touch at the rim are so, so good. He's just going to be so potent as a slasher. And the crazy thing is that, like, he is currently 6'7", 220, but he looks like he can add so much weight. Like, he's going to get bigger.
Gonna be huge. Like, he's already so strong and uses that so well on his slashes, but he's going to be gigantic. Like,
yeah, like, I seeing him for the first time on that college court, I thought that he looked kind of slim, that this was not the same, like, level of physical dominance that we saw when he was playing against high school players, and yet he still is the strongest guy out there.
Yeah, it's like UC Arlington's not exactly a great team, but it was really encouraging to see him dominate in like the exact same ways that he has throughout his entire youth career. Like that, as a scorer, nothing looked different. Like there really wasn't any playing up, like playing down because of his physical capabilities of his competition. Like he looked every bit of as overwhelming as he always does.
Yeah, and then I saw criticisms of his defense, but I thought that he was actually quite good defensively.
Yeah, it wasn't flashy, but like I think the team defense was solid. I didn't think he really made that many mistakes. Obviously, like the high level rim protection flashes, that didn't show up. But again, yeah, it was solid. Like I don't think he was bad at all.
Yeah, and that's going to be there. The high level rim protection is going to be there for a wing, and that's going to be a huge source of value for him. But the team defense was good in his first game. Like he was good with stunts. He was really good with positioning. It was just really solid. There were like a few bad moments. Like he died on like one or two screens pretty badly. But on the whole, like it was quite good for a first college game.
Yeah. I mean, in the grand scheme of things for Cade, I think this was a pretty average game for him. Like
average to below even.
Average. Yeah, I mean, this wasn't that spectacular of a Cade game because, like Max said, he didn't really do any of the elite passing that he's known for. And it was still, like, by other college player standards and especially by other college freshman standards, like, a really, really good game. So, I mean, you see we'll talk more about other prospects later. You'll see, like you're even starting now to see some conversation about, you know, challenging for the number one spot. There is no challenging Cade Cunningham. Like if this is his like game, his debut, then just wait till he gets going and he's scoring effortlessly with the passing. Hopefully as he learns to just connect with more and trust his Oklahoma State teammates, obviously adjusting to probably like the worst teammates he's played with relative to competition and quite some time. Like obviously like no Montverde, which is like basically an NBA team. And then even at Texas Titans, I mean like he doesn't have a lob threat like Greg Brown. Like, so
yeah, the rest of Oklahoma State was not super encouraging.
Yeah.
The Boone twins, I'm not impressed with. Likely and Cade did not mesh well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any of that is super surprising.
I thought maybe Likely would have some ability to like attack off of advantage situations and be useful in those situations, but yeah, it was not good. it looks like Cade's going to have to be very much a one-man show. Hopefully,
and I think he can. Like, I think that's honestly probably good for him because, I mean, there's like, even after the game, I mean, you see people, some still concerns about his wiring and just his aggression. And I think while obviously there are some concerns about his willingness to just take over and score at will, like he showed what he can do in that regard on Thursday. And there's so many examples of him doing it against high level competition dating back to EYBL. Well, yes, he basically was like a game managing quarterback at Montverde just because he didn't have to score. Like I come back to the EYBL game where he had like 15 rim attempts against Phenom with a bunch of other high level prospects every time. And I'm like, yeah, there's no reason to worry about this guy's wiring or ability to score against high level competition. So yeah, I mean, yeah, not the best Cade game in the world, but really not walking away with any major concerns or change perceptions. Cade's still one of the best prospects in a long time. And again, like a pretty solid first game, nothing special. And the fact that this game was nothing special just shows you how high of a bar it really is for Cade and just how good he is.
Yeah. I think the point about him kind of being bullied into being forceful as a scorer is important. Cause I was a little concerned. Yeah. With the, how he approaches the game that he has some Chris Paul to him that like he wants to make the right play to a fault. Having this step early in his career where he's on a team where he's going to be just bullied into being a scorer, I think might be good for him for a while.
Oh, absolutely.
That he's really forced to be assertive as a scorer and realizes that making the right play is not necessarily the right play when you're Cade Cunningham and you can just initiate contact and like hit a leaner because you have crazy touch and are 6'7". Like learning that, I think, is a valuable lesson. And it seemed like he learned that about 5 minutes into his first college game against Texas Arlington. So that's pretty encouraging. He is that guy. Cade is that guy. The debut wasn't even that great by his standards, and it was a dominant performance by a college freshman. The conversation's trying to put Jalen Suggs in that conversation, people trying to put Jalen Green in that conversation. It's ludicrous. There's no wait and see. Cade has been that guy. He is that guy. He's a total stud. He's the number one pick.
Yeah. So I think at this point, we can move on to our next topic, which is the Kentucky guys. Terrence Clark was the best prospect in Kentucky's opener against Morehead State
by a huge margin.
Did not see that coming. First of all, I think defensively, I was kind of stunned at how good he was. Like he did not make mistakes. He was impactful as a team defender, stunting at the nail and digging on drives for steals. He made good rotations pretty consistently. Was not something I expected from Clark. And then, another big worry I had with Clark was like how he'd function off the ball on offense. And I think he did really well attacking off of the catch. He got to his spots and hit a couple floaters and little pull-ups as well. And then showed some of his kind of ridiculous handling capabilities on the ball, just violent in and outs or crossovers to create separation and get his shots off. So yeah, it was a really impressive performance for Clark. I coming into the season was very down on him, not ready to change after one game, but it was a really encouraging performance to see him step up and be the most impressive prospect on that Kentucky team. I still think my general concerns about his his overall on-ball scoring creation weren't like totally abated, but still like an impressive performance and one that I was pleasantly surprised by.
Yeah, since this is a weird cycle where we didn't really get to do proper previews outside of a few instances, and then the here and there we did with trying to cover things, we should, I think, go a bit into who Clark has been in the past. I think that he's always been a good defender. He wasn't, like, flawless like he was in Kentucky's first game, where, I mean, yeah, some of the positioning and the perfectly timed recovery, he had that one play where he rotated to stop that drive and then recovered at the perfect time, got the steal, run out, and then got fouled. He was pretty exquisite defensively, like really good. Like if you don't set a good screen, he was going to get over it. Like he was good chasing off ball screens. Yeah, just really involved as a team defender. He was just awesome. He was so good defensively. And I think he's always been good defensively. He's always been a smart player. He's always had a shifty handle and been able to play with pace that doesn't necessarily create advantages, but like has the potential to. And he's always been a smart passer too. The concerns come in with scoring, and that he has this reputation as a freak athlete that he's just very much never been. Like, he's not an explosive player at all. In fact, that's like a huge downfall for him. And the shooting has always been a huge question mark as well. And those things are still very much there for me, but he looked great in spite of that in Kentucky's first game, that the shiftiness and the handle were so good that he was able to get to that floater. He did hit some pull-ups from mid-range. The three was concerning. He had like his knees bowed in so much that they hit each other. It was
bad. That one spot up was
that he airballed. I'm pretty
sure it was an airball, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was concerning. Yeah, where his knees basically tapped. That's got to be improved. But yeah, I mean, overall, like the short mid-range to long mid-range shot making was good.
Yeah, and that just combined with really awesome defense, and the passing has always been there for him. We didn't even get to see that much of that, but like he's been an intelligent passer in the past. So if that shiftiness really works, if that handle really works to be breaking down defenses, I mean, he's a really serious prospect. Like if that's the case, he's I think a lottery level guy he could certainly be, which is not how he was regarded by us, not how he was regarded by draft Twitter as a whole. But it's still very much wait and see. I'm concerned about the scoring. Like I think that the explosion is going to be a much bigger issue when he's not playing Morehead State. I think the shooting is going to prove to be a huge issue, and that's really the crux of it, and that's what it's been always with him, that either on the ball or off the ball, he's always going to need to be able to shoot, and I'm not really sure that he can do that reliably.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely encouraged by his off-ball, just general off-ball movement and activity and attacking off the catch and navigating to spots, which was one of my concerns, is how can he function without the ball, and is he even good enough to function with the ball? But yeah, I mean, once he's, you know, I think if he's ever thrust into more of a primary on-ball role, especially against better competition, I'm very excited and interested to see how he holds up in terms of creation. Because off of the ball, as you know, as like a secondary attacker, I think his handle is kind of enough to get to wherever he wants. But as a primary attacker, it's going to be a different story. And I mean, to see if he's, you know, this defensive performance was just a blip, or if he can kind of continue this throughout the rest of the season. But overall, I mean, won't get carried away based on one game against a bad team, but still an encouraging sign for Clark and his future prospects.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think at the very least that we underestimated him quite a bit. I'm certainly not on the he's Kentucky's best prospect train, like not even remotely close to that. But yeah, he looked really legit. He looked like a very good prospect.
So moving on to Kentucky's best prospect, who did not have as good of a debut, BJ Boston was kind of underwhelmed.
Yeah, BJ, the thing that popped immediately was that physicality did not make up for strength the way that it did at lower levels. That he was trying to initiate contact in the paint and at the rim, and it didn't work to draw fouls, and it didn't work to allow him to maintain his balance and finish despite the contact. So that was pretty concerning. He just kind of crumpled when he initiated contact early in that game. The shot was concerning to me because it, like, that dip looked really exaggerated again. So especially coming off those, like, those curls that Kentucky runs, like he couldn't really get those off. Because of that he really had that exaggerated dip. That was pretty concerning. Defensively, it was quite mixed, I would say. Had some good moments on the ball for sure, but definitely had a lot of bad moments. Had some issues where, like, he would do the first thing he had to do as a team defender, so he would, like, tag or stunt or something like that. But then the recovery turned into a mess where he didn't have any idea where he was supposed to be going, and he just couldn't keep track of multiple things at once. You know, I expect him to be mixed defensively. That's kind of what he's always been. But there was not really a lot of playmaking to make up for that. Although he did have some really nice shot contests, I think, on the perimeter. Late in the game, he got going a little bit more. did hit a leaner through contact, did have an extension finish. But it wasn't great. It was not a great debut. It wasn't terrible, I'd say. And the stats ended up being okay. But yeah, was concerning for sure.
Yeah, I was definitely underwhelmed by the defense. I think a lot of it, like on the ball, like even on the ball, like the kind of initial mirroring would go well. But then he'd kind of like overturn his hips or get out of position with his footwork and get burned. I just thought he was like a little bit late on his rotation and his gambles weren't really well timed.
Yeah, a lot of gambles.
A lot of gambles. I mean, he's kind of a gambler.
He is.
At his heart, but I think generally in the past, he's been a very well-timed gambler and one who has great instincts and closing speed. But it was just off in his first college game. He just wasn't picking his spots well defensively. Yeah, just definitely, I think if this is going to be his offensive usage, I'm pretty concerned. I don't think he ran a pick and roll or I'm not going to remember.
Yeah, like, he was not.
Wasn't allowed to do any sort of shot creation, which is kind of his calling card as a top two prospect for both of us, being an elite shot creator at his height, and he wasn't able to do any of that. Just again, coming around like 15-foot curls is not his strength. It never was going to be, given his mechanics and kind of his ability to gather and you know attack and be decisive and get downhill and create separation. So I'm definitely a little concerned if that's going to be his offensive role going forward, and he's really not going to be able to be allowed to create at all. I'm definitely a little bit worried about how he does, because that's even as a slasher, a role that requires a lot of strength and touch to convert kind of quick move finishes and shots around the rim with, which Boston is kind of primarily like a craft and body control physicality kind of finisher, which he might not be able to be as well at the college level. So definitely concerns. The shot was concerning. Did think there was some nice attacking off the catch though, especially towards the end of that game, like you said, where he was able to use that footwork and burst and extension finishes and body control hanging to generate some points. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a little worried, less about this performance in a vacuum and more just about the role we'll see him take at Kentucky going forward. Yeah, I mean, hoping he can bounce back. I mean, I'm sure he's going to have plenty of good performances as well this year. But yeah, I mean, did not impress and was definitely not as good as Clark was in this one.
Yeah, the usage was for sure concerning. That he was like pretty strictly a wing, and that there was a lot of handling for Askew, a lot more handling for Clark. It was concerning. Not a good debut. Another guy who I mean, with BJ, at least you can give the caveats that like he wasn't terrible, that there were some good moments. Isaiah Jackson, there was like the one huge rim rotation that he had, yeah. And otherwise
he had a few good ones. I think he had the one in the first half, but then I think there were a couple more in the second half. But yeah, I mean, generally it was not good. Like he, like offensively, like the decision making is so catastrophic. Like it's like hilariously bad. Like his first make was that like quadruple pump, totally smothered, like 20-foot mid-range that went in. And if that's not like the strongest encapsulation of what Isaiah Jackson is on offense, I mean, that's what he was in EYBL, pretty much just this horrific decision maker who has like all of the physical tools where he should be a dominant interior scorer, but loves these terrible mid ranges that will go in sometimes, but are very much not reliable. So
more hilarious decision maker, Isaiah Jackson or Precious?
Isaiah Jackson, I think. Yeah. I mean, Precious, I think Precious's decision making is less amusing. I think it's kind of like definitely not great, but like Isaiah Jackson just does things that just make you sit back in your chair and be like, just sigh a heavy sigh.
Well, because Isaiah Jackson, brought up in the chaos of Spire with LaMelo Ball, ambitious player.
Very ambitious. I mean, I think seeing him play with LaMelo and then not with LaMelo is clear how big of an advantage playing with LaMelo is if you're a big. But yeah, I mean,
even beyond the offense, like there were some freaky moments, like that one really big rim rotation and semi transition. I think there were a couple like high point blocks where you can just see his quick leaping and his vertical and his closing speed. All of that is just insane. But then, I mean, then you get to just like how jumpy he is as a rim protector, and just how generally unaware he is on a play to play basis, and how even though he's like a pretty good mover, just in terms of athletic standpoint, he just doesn't know where he's going. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure you're bigger on Jackson than I was coming in. I'm still not very optimistic on him.
Yeah, like, more as a curiosity, but as it becomes more and more clear, like, what on earth does he do on offense? Because I don't think that you can really make him a center like you can with Precious. He gets less and less interesting. The vestiges of Spire in like handling and passing have interested me, but you know, if those are, how much is that really worth? Yeah. How much does that matter?
After watching him play sans LaMelo in EYBL and just watch, you don't have one of the best passers in the world and you're no longer making good passes or decent handling decisions. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to assume, it's fair to assume that I think there's a better chance than not that he doesn't play with a pass like LaMelo ever again.
For sure.
I mean, it's going to be tough for him to really fit into a big man role, just because, like, despite having the tools to, like, be a pretty good role man, I think, just doesn't have the understanding of how to play as a roller at all, which is important and probably under-discussed. And I'm sure it's something that can be learned, but Isaiah Jackson, to me, is starting at a pretty low baseline and isn't going to
get it. I just don't know how much experience he has doing that.
And he's not really going to get it at Kentucky either, because that's just not the kind of offense they run, and they don't really have the personnel to like enable him. Like, Askew is a pretty good passer, but I mean, I don't think he's really anything special. So it's definitely it was an entertaining debut.
There were high points. There were entertaining points.
Yeah. His highs, especially defensively, are really high. Like, don't get me wrong.
Crazy high. Yeah.
Like, he has some like best in the class rim protection moments, and then he also has some worst in the class team defensive big moments, specifically just making boneheaded double teams and missing rotations on the backside that you definitely should be making. So yeah, I mean,
losing shooters off the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's problematic, but he's certainly entertaining, and I'm excited to watch more of him this year at Kentucky. But yeah, I mean, I'm like pretty confident with my skepticism on Isaiah Jackson, you know, from preseason, that I just don't think he has enough tools to overcome everything else. But I mean, maybe he does, and I think he's always going to be in like an intriguing gamble. I think there's kind of a floor for him, just like there was a floor for Precious because of those tools. But yeah, it's not great overall.
Yeah, I think he's probably going to end up being too much of a tweener to just be made a center like Precious. Which is a shame, because yeah, he has some crazy tools. Precious, I think, was just a smarter defender.
Much like totally different level of team defensive awareness and instincts, and that wasn't even like it was good for Precious, but not like otherworldly or anything.
The wait is finally over. Football's in full effect. With many teams strutting their stuff, you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Support for the Prep to Pro NBA Draft podcast comes from Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Jingle balls to the walls, fellas. Listen up. Untrimmed pubes are a thing of the past. It's time to gear up and get yourself the gift of shaving this holiday season. I am talking about the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. The Lawnmower 3.0 comes inside their brand new Perfect Package 3.0, which makes for the perfect gift this holiday season. It's literally everything you need to keep trimmed, cut free, and smelling nice down there. The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting it on the smelliest part of your body? And yes, your balls stink. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code ARMCHAIR. Clean up your nuts and make Santa proud this year.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Deuce McBride.
Yes.
Deuce McBride has played three games already. In 3 days. I watched the first two. I watched like a couple minutes of the game that's happening right now against Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
I don't think that Deuce has made many strides as a playmaker at all. It's still kind of a situation where you like you trap him, you hard hedge him, and it's gonna go poorly. He had that one play against VCU, that pick and roll, where it was like he accelerated at the perfect time, drew the help, had a nice little drop off. But otherwise, I don't think there's been a lot of progress. It's still a lot of bad shots, a lot of missed passes, a lot of you can just pressure him and things will go poorly for West Virginia. But the defense is still amazing. Like his defense as a guard is pretty special. On the ball, off the ball, individually off the ball, denying
handoffs and screens. Like,
yeah, as a team defender, his anticipation is wild. He is the GOAT transition defender still. And then offensively, he's made a lot of tough pull-ups. There are some signs maybe of some more scoring diversity there. In that first game, he had that right wing screen rejection, pretty explosive. Then hit the deceleration with the 1-2 footwork, drew the foul and finished. Like if there's more of that scoring diversity from him, I'm pretty interested. Like he's still there will be avenues to really high level impact if he can seriously self-create while being that special of a guard defender, even if he can't really drive team offense like that. That's still a really valuable player, especially if he can be reliable in spot ups. And then given that defensively, he does have such a big frame that he's capable of using and that he does have such outsized team D impact, that he's still a very interesting proposition. But it sucks that the playmaking's not there. That takes off like Deuce McBride in the lottery off the table. I still think there are avenues to like Deuce McBride is comfortably a first round pick. But you know, need to keep tracking how good the pull-up shooting is. And I want to keep seeing more of this scoring diversity, but the few flashes through a couple games of a bit more than just tough pull-ups was encouraging, even if the playmaking was pretty disappointing.
Yeah. I think again, like for that really impressive pick and roll pass in the VCU game, there was one later in the game that was kind of the same situation. Hooper, he beat his man and accelerated downhill and had a pretty wide open roller and just didn't hit him and ended up charging. So I think just generally the missed reads and, well, I mean, like you said, I think when you trap Deuce, it's not that he like totally capitulates and turns it over. He just can't exploit a trap the way you'd want him to.
Last year, he would totally like explode in on himself and it was bad. So yeah, I mean, that's actually not progress, but it's still
that's true. I mean, I think at least in the VCU game, he didn't really do that. He was able to handle them, but just wasn't able to really take advantage of them is what you want. But yeah, I mean, just Deuce, I think, has to be a really great tough shot maker. And I think there's a lot of sign that he is going to be a really great tough shot maker. Like he's a legitimately awesome tough shot maker. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely avenues for him as like a really good off guard next to a big initiator. I think that's likely his ideal role, assuming he's not able to create shots for his teammates. But yeah, I mean, just looking to see more of that, more of that self creation equity, just more easy shots. I think is the thing for him.
There are no easy shots for
Yeah,
teammates.
Like all of his great creation makes are still like really difficult. Like, I'm pretty sure in the VCU game at the end, he had one kind of easier shot where we're pretty sure he hit like a behind the back dribble and accelerated and finished with touch over a couple of defenders. Like that's an advantage created initially with handling, which is definitely an improvement and something you want to see more. But even on the end of that play, you just don't see the easy shots because he lacks the necessary tools, easy shots to the rim, especially versus contact and a crowded paint. So yeah, I mean, definitely like a little concerned with his lack of easy buckets, but I don't think that kind of discounts his ability to play as a valuable off-ball guard. It just means he can't be more of an offensive driver, which is unfortunate, but I think kind of expected.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, I didn't really expect like a serious leap as a self-creator or a playmaker. I think the incremental strides are nice to see. And again, I'm excited to watch the VCU game. I mean, the West Virginia game against Western Kentucky. That'll be a good test as well. But
yeah, are you still thinking of him? I know it's incredibly early, and your opinion shouldn't change that much. But you're still thinking of him as approximately a first round guy?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think obviously some of my ranking him as high as I mean, ranking him like in the mid teens was kind of hoping for some improvement. But I never expected anything catastrophic. I mean, is anything cataclysmic in terms of improvement? And he is someone who, even if he doesn't make drastic improvements as a self-creator or a playmaker, I think the shot-making and defense combo is good enough to thrive in a secondary role, just given the trends of the league with all of the big creators and the kind of increasing room for these smaller off guards with secondary skills. And his skill set is pretty rare. Like, you don't see a lot of guards with his defensive ability that are that good of tough shot makers. Like, yes, he has serious limitations, but the strength he has don't come around very often. Like, he is legitimately like a one of a kind like guard defender at his size. Like, the strength and the off ball instincts and the transition defense and the point of attack footwork, like, it's so complete at his age. And
yeah, I mean, it's weird, right? Because Deuce's whole background is that he was a football guy basically until college. And so there, it's easy to understand, I think, why the high-level offensive reads are not there, because he maybe hasn't seen the reps that a lot of guys his age have seen. But that's why I don't understand the defensive instincts that are absolutely unbelievable. It's really weird that he just, like, he really has a sixth sense on defense. Like, some of his anticipation is absolutely incredible.
I mean, I think a lot of his, like, playmaking is also just, like, disabled by his lack of height and lack of ability to create, like, a lot of space. Like, there will be times where, like, it kind of looks like he's looking in the direction of a read, but he just, like, can't throw over or around defenders. Like, there was one play in the VCU game where there was, like a potential skip pass, like a wide open weak corner, I think in the first half, and like he just like was engulfed by defenders and didn't have the creativity or the size to hit it. But yeah, I mean, definitely not the same level of instincts even then as defensive, which yeah are really special. I mean, there's always going to be, like, you know, you can make a connection to like playing quarterback and reading defenses and stuff, but you know, impossible to know how much that really has an impact. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, as we continue to learn more about the connection between offensive and defensive instincts in terms of, you know, reading defenses and reading offenses, it's I mean, he's one of the most fascinating prospects in this class to me, for sure. Like,
yeah, he's a really interesting, he's a guy who I'd like to learn more about his track record developmentally, because he is I think definitely a unique case.
Yeah. All right, I think let's move on to our next one. Nishon Bowens Highland of VCU, as we've been talking about. Skinny, like really skinny, lethal shooting guard, who as a freshman showed like really impressive shooting versatility and range and touch. And I think that was, I'm pretty sure, I think that was there in the first game against Utah State where he hit five threes, like off of a bunch of different actions, off of movement, pull-ups. The shot was really great. And I think he's a really, really great team defender as well. Like, so disciplined playing in passing lanes, not overhelping, but he's great at like the little bait and retreat, kind of helping just enough to confuse a defender and force him to pass out. And then he uses his length and timing to nab steals. And then, you know, that's still there as well. But the really interesting thing is he's getting to the rim in ways that he didn't last year. Like, the burst, you know, especially I think against West Virginia, looks really, really good. Like, he was constantly beating defenders with his first step and getting really low, his torso almost parallel to the ground, and swiping with his off arm and using pace and little hesitations and changes of speed and pick and roll to get to the rim. And that's a really encouraging development for a guy whose main concern, I think, last year was that rim frequency. I have a stat that he had 6 half-court rim attempts against West Virginia in a second game. Last year, he had 41 in 31 games, which is less than 2 a game. Obviously, some, you know, major small sample, and he had no half-court rim attempts against I'm pretty sure he had no half-court rim attempts against Utah State. But still very encouraging. The thing is, he cannot convert them, just because his combination of a total lack of strength and inability to jump just makes it so he kind of capitulates at the sight of any contact at the rim. He cannot handle it. he had one like pretty nice like inside hand lefty extension finish at the end of the like the West Virginia game, but I think the craft is okay, but generally he's just too physically limited to finish. But yeah, point being, he definitely clearly has a ways to go, and but a clear avenue for improvement. But this is an encouraging development. I was really high on Bones coming in. I had him as like a fringe first rounder just because of the shooting and team defense and his general smarts as a passer. I don't think we've seen any of the passing really this year, or at least much of it. Yeah, I mean, encouraging development in terms of rim frequency for him. The burst looks great. Just a matter of converting them is going to be the thing for him.
Yeah, the way that he married good burst, I think, with really nice speed, like really nice pace and some legitimate shiftiness with his handle was really awesome. Yeah, he was just living at the rim in that West Virginia game. But like you said, when he got there, it was a disaster. He's so limited vertically. Like he had this one play where it was like a hop step and then tried to jump and just got like 4 inches off the ground and got the shot completely destroyed.
Players not being able to jump, a theme of that game, also with Oscar.
So Bones, I feel the same way about him. He's really interesting. I think that there is a probably a conversation to be had there between Bones and Deuce. Like that was a fun matchup, even if both were you know, kind of underwhelmed in the final stat line. It was, I think, instructive and two cool players. Yeah.
And it was always going to be like a defensive game. Like VCU didn't score until like, the 12 minute mark. Like it was, it was always gonna be that kind of game. But yeah, I mean, definitely encouraging. Like it was like you said, a fun matchup and both encouraging things. But
yeah, the Bones rim frequency, it had some Vassell against Pitt vibes though, where it's like, wait, what is going on here? This guy can do what now?
It was really stunning.
And it matters a lot less if he can't actually threaten to score when there. But getting there in the first place matters a lot. Especially
it's a really important step.
Like, yeah, if you're a smart player who can start to capitalize on that as a passer, it gets pretty interesting. That was an encouraging performance from Bones on top of the awesome team defense.
And last year, like, I think Bones is a pretty good passer, but most of his passes were just like of the pick and roll variety, you know, skips and lay downs and such. I don't think he didn't do much of the drive creation passing, you know, the high speed lay downs and wraparounds and kickouts, just because he didn't get to the rim that much. So I think it'll take him some time to adapt as a passer and adapt his court mapping while he's, you know, if this slashing is real, but I do think we'll see some more passing for him probably later in the season. I mean, I'm optimistic about Bones. Like, I still prefer Deuce, I think, but like, I certainly have them both in the same tier. Like, in the first round, like, they're both really good prospects. Just like Bones shooting, and now coupled with that rim frequency, is like really encouraging. Like, that's really good to see.
Same tier. Still prefer Deuce slightly, but. Yeah, I'm getting much more open to the argument for Bones Highland. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how bad the finishing is and how much he can really maintain the rim frequency.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I mean, like, he's played against good teams so far. Like,
yeah,
which is encouraging. I mean, like, and good defenses at that, so like.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, doing that against West Virginia is you know, something. That's quite the defense. So yeah, doing that against West Virginia matters. Should we talk Io Desunmu a little bit?
Yeah, I haven't really seen much of Illinois. So I'll let you talk about Io, who has turned some eyes. Who has opened some eyes this year.
I watched most of the first game and have seen bits and pieces of the two since. We have not been Io guys in the past. In the slightest, not even really viewed him as much of a prospect, at least on my part.
Yeah, same.
He's been really good to start this year. Like he's always had shiftiness, always had a lot of speed, but has been limited a lot as a shooter and vertically and with his passing and has been like whatever defensively, I guess. But to start this year, he's been really good. The shiftiness and handling are really potent. He's playing with great pace. Like he really is varying his speeds. And the shot looks better. It's looked really good off the catch. Like, he looks really balanced. Just looks good shooting the ball. Like, still a really aggressive thumber, but, you know, he looks improved there. I want to see a lot more of the pull-up attempts. I've seen way more catch and shoot, and that's what I found encouraging. I think I've only seen one pull-up, and there still seem to be some issues there, but yeah, want to see how the pull-ups are. But he's looked good. A guy to monitor. Like, they have not played good competition so far, except for, I guess, that Ohio game today.
Ohio's pretty good, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, something to wait and see against better competition. But Io, he's off to a good start.
Yeah. I mean, they're slated to play, like, Duke and Baylor as well. So we're certainly going to get the Io thing. I think in the little that I've seen, I think it's just general, like, decision making and understanding of kind of how to play has really improved. It looks a lot better to me. Just someone who, like, always was kind of prone to bad decisions and never and just, like, didn't, you know, wasn't making any real advanced reads and was and didn't take great shots. But he's been really good there, at least in the little I've watched. Small sample, obviously, but he has through the first two games, at least, had a 4-assist-to-turnover ratio and had 8 assists to 3 turnovers today against Ohio. So that's much improved from 1.2 assists-to-turnover last year, and not as good in his freshman year as well. So that's another, like, mini step that he seems to have taken from me. I definitely am wanting to watch more of the Illinois games. I'm probably not going to watch the first two, but I'll watch the one against Ohio because I'm interested in Jason Preston, who we'll talk about later. But yeah, I mean, certainly looks like a leap. And if nothing else, I think definitely now a serious prospect that's on the radar and worth considering. Still, I think always a little concern when you see a prospect who is kind of underwhelming his first couple years. And then as an older junior or senior takes this leap to where now he's kind of a legitimate prospect. Still, I mean, it's good to see.
Yeah, the thing I'll say for him is that, like, Io has never been – he's never been limited in terms of his burst. He's never been limited in terms of his handling ability. It's the knowing how to play things. It's the knowing how to vary speeds. It's the decision-making. It's the being a reliable shooter. So with him, it's not like he is a junior or senior who is, you know, really athletically limited, size limited, and has figured out a pace at which he can – you know, get shots off at the rim by just being off from that split second of the expectation of the defender. That's not what Io is. Io has had lots of physical tools and skills that he hasn't been able to apply in a productive way necessarily. Figuring that out, I think, is a little bit different from being, you know, Mason Jones and you know, knowing that split second where you can turn the defender's expectations against them and get a scoop layup off. Like, I think that's a little bit different. But yeah, Io, he seems to at the very least be a lot closer to that guy that I think, you know, like, college basketball writers kind of think that he's been, of one of the best players in college basketball. He seems to be a lot closer to that at the very least, and certainly a fringe prospect at least. But yeah, he has looked pretty interesting through the first few games. And this is coming from a person who has not been an Io guy by any means.
Should we do one more and then cut part one, or?
Yeah, you want to, let's just keep recording this and I guess see if we need to do multiple parts at the end.
All right.
All right. Next we've got Brandon Newman of Purdue. I don't know if you've watched either of Purdue's games.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So this is just me. Brandon Newman. I liked him a lot last year coming out of high school. He ended up redshirting last year. He was one of the best shooters in the 2019 high school class, and I thought had enough team defense ability, had some actual, like, explosion that is unusual for a just, like, 6'5 off-ball shooter. That seems to be the case so far at Purdue. He's playing big minutes. He's starting for them. So I watched the game that was yesterday, which was Thursday, Thanksgiving, against I don't Clinton. Remember. Yes, against Clemson. So against good competition. Really, really sound team defense throughout that game. Was really good on stunts and tags, really consistent. Showed a really nice understanding of the court on both ends that, like, you know, baseline drive coming, he was, you know, early sliding down or he's in the corner and there's a pick and roll being run. He's shaking up to the wing and, you know, getting himself open for a three. So showed a nice understanding of how to move on the court while being a really solid team defender, while showing some finishing ability, attacking off the catch. He finished it two offhand finishes. He has some actual burst for the closeout attacker role and can elevate a bit as a finisher. So I don't think like some special player by any means, but he's a freshman, or I guess a redshirt freshman, who can really shoot the ball, has some ability to actually put the ball on the floor as a closeout attacker, and is quite a reliable team defender who moves well enough laterally. That's pretty interesting as a 3-and-D prospect. I'm not like crazy about him, but certainly someone that people should be paying attention to because I think he looks very much the part of the guy that I thought he was coming out of high school and potentially, you know, like a second round type guy eventually.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of Newman, but I do plan to, as I like a lot of Purdue's other freshman class. I was intrigued by Jaden Ivey and Ethan Morton coming in, and they have like the 7-4 center, right?
Edie,
him, who I've seen clips of and looks kind of incredible, giant.
He's really, really large. I think people said that he moved better in the first game. I had some issues in the Clemson game. I did not watch the first game. Yeah, he's huge. He's a really large person. Ivy didn't play in that Clemson game. He had, a foot injury. Aaron Wheeler might be a thing again.
Oh my God! Don't play with my emotions.
We'll wait and see on that. But he's playing a lot at least.
That's progress, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, man, I can't emotionally do the Aaron Wheeler thing again.
So I think we're gonna cut it for part one here. We're going to talk about more of the games and the prospects that have happened in the first couple days. Next time, you can follow the pod at Prep Number 2 Pro Pod on Twitter. Follow Max at Max A. Carlin. Follow me at Ben_Pfeiffer_. And with that, we'll see you all next time.